I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we're exposing the real reason why Democrats, including Governor Bob Ferguson, insisted on including popular bipartisan tax breaks in their income tax bill. Also, the downtown Seattle business community warns its socialist mayor against new business taxes. And pay to play? Governor Bob Ferguson's choice for the newest state Supreme Court justice just happens to be one of his political donors. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz, and Washington State is the laughingstock of the entire nation, quite literally, or at least the laughingstock of people who understand what the steps we're taking right now will do to the future of our state, to our economy, to our state budget, and really just to overall quality of life. And I part of me understands that it's probably my algorithm feeding me every post that anyone says anything about the income tax. I definitely wonder what somebody else's algorithm looks like. But when I open up X, it's the New York Post, it's the New York Times, it's Bloomberg, it's the Wall Street Journal editorial board calling Washington State's income tax a con. It's Fox News all over the place. Casey DeSantis, the first lady of the state of Florida, along with Ron DeSantis, celebrating what passing an income tax that right now is specifically on millionaires will do for their state. And it's going to be a boon to Florida. It already has been. Jeff Bezos brought all his money there on his big yacht there so he could flee our capital gains tax, save himself a cool $1 billion. And also, I think in the process, just give a middle finger to a political class that has vilified him at every single turn. And now Howard Schultz is heading to sunny Miami. We'll talk about that more coming up in Florida Report today. But it's bewildering. It's absolutely bewildering how anyone with a lick of common sense could believe that this trajectory our state is on is a good thing. And I mean, Bob Ferguson ran as a moderate. We knew he wasn't a moderate. Bob Ferguson blows with the wind. He's going to do whatever he thinks he needs to do to keep his job. And, you know, maybe the citizens of Washington State will wake up. But I want to talk to you today about an unfortunate reality in our state. And as you know, I don't belong to any political party. I probably never will. Certainly in our state, I have more in common with the state Republicans because they're trying to stop this train wreck that we're in. But I feel comfortable saying that Washington State Republicans as a party are not up to the task. The state Democratic Party for years now has been engaged in a sophisticated scheme to lay the groundwork for what is happening right now. Democrats have been playing 4D chess, and I don't even think Republicans have been playing checkers. Republicans don't even know that a game has been afoot. And some of them might be wise to this, but overall, these steps that led to this moment have been taking place for the better part of 7 to 10 years, and it's been methodic. It's been meticulous. And it has been, as much as I think their policies are stupid, it has been highly intellectual. And what's happening right now isn't by accident. So remember, Governor Bob Ferguson came out, and he has said this multiple times about the income tax proposal on millionaires. He has come out and played hardball, right? Saying, well, I'm not going to sign that unless it also includes all these various tax breaks.
I've said multiple times that any bill I sign must send a significant percentage of the revenue back to Washington families and small business owners.
Has to do it. We can't even do it separate. It's got to be in the bill. The bill has to allude to the things that we're gonna give a Washingtonians tax breaks on, insistent on it. Why? You know, because one of the tax breaks that they're going to give is a break on the sales tax for things like diapers. Well, for a couple years now, Republicans have been trying to pass a separate bill with a sales tax on diapers, and Democrats have rejected it. So if Democrats and Bob Ferguson really support this policy of, hey, let's give a sales tax on baby supplies and stuff, why wouldn't they have done it when Republicans introduced it? Why embed it into this income tax bill? So look at the intent section of Senate Bill 6346. This is going to become very important, and you will be seeing this language again in the not-so-distant future on a ballot near you. It says it's an act relating to investing in Washington families and businesses to fund K-12 education, healthcare, higher education, and other essential government services and the working families tax credit, and to reduce certain sales and use taxes and certain business and occupation taxes. It repeats this and adds even more flowery language. In the intent section, the legislature finds that the state, through the state's general fund, invests in K-12 education, healthcare, higher education, other essential government services, and the working families tax credit, all of which help Washingtonians succeed and thrive. So the intent section of this bill doesn't really talk about very much what the actual intent is, which is to pass an income tax. It's to pass an income tax. That's what the bill does, right? That's the general main purpose of it, to pass an income tax, for now an income tax on people making over $1 million a year. But you see, they've front-loaded it and included in the text all of this language about helping families and education and investing in Washingtonians and a working families tax credit. Why are they doing that? Why is that in the bill, in the intent section? Why has Governor Bob Ferguson said it must be included, all these tax breaks in the bill? Well, I take you back to 2022, a story we covered at the time. Washington State Democrats pushed through House Bill 1876, again, passed in 2022. It was a bill that requires fiscal impact statements to be put on the ballot if there's an initiative that would repeal a tax. Now, they did this in anticipation of Let's Go Washington, or someone at the time, running initiatives to repeal things like their tax on capital gains. So the bill said this: the people are entitled to know the fiscal impact that their vote will have on public investments at the time they cast their ballots. The legislature further finds that when a ballot measure will affect funding for public investments, a neutral, non-prejudicial disclosure of the public investments affected will provide greater transparency and necessary information for voters. But we all knew what that was at the time. That was their way to tip the scales. If somebody was going to come and try to repeal one of the many taxes, unpopular taxes that they had just passed, tax on capital gains, long-term care tax, the Climate Commitment Act, which is a massive tax at the pump, they were preparing for it. They had the policy, they knew what would come, and they were looking for ways that when those issues got to the ballot and in front of voters, they could tip the scales. And tip the scales they did. So they passed that law requiring these fiscal impact statements to be on the ballot. And they were able to implement it in time to have those fiscal impact statements on the ballot when Let's Go Washington ran three anti-tax initiatives. There was also a fourth on the ballot that had to do with natural gas, but it didn't deal with any fiscal issues, so there wasn't a fiscal impact statement on it. But let's revisit what that language looked like on the ballot in 2024 because of that law passed in 2022. I think where this really made a difference was when it came to Initiative 2109, and this had to do with the capital gains tax. Initiative 2109 concerns taxes. This measure would repeal an excise tax imposed on the sale or exchange of certain long-term capital assets by individuals who have annual capital gains over $250,000. Pre-2022, that's where it would have ended. But when they passed that very strategic law, it meant that this sentence was added right there on the ballot. This measure would decrease funding for K-12 education, higher education, school construction, early learning, and childcare. So now you have Washington voters, which lean obviously progressive, who might read that first thing and think, an excise tax, I don't know, is that going to impact my assets? But then they say, well, it's going to hurt kids. And it's going to hurt schools. And what happened? The repeal of the capital gains tax failed. So we can use that as a blueprint for what is going to happen in the 8 months to come. So Washington State Democrats for 40 years have wanted to pass an income tax. That's what I say, 40 chess, playing the long game. So they finally got a state Supreme Court that they believe will rule it constitutional, despite the fact for 100 years it's been ruled unconstitutional in the plain language and understanding of our state constitution. Anyone could understand. You could have a fourth grade education and understand that an income tax is against our state constitution. But they've been putting slowly all these pieces into place. And they know that 11 times Washington voters have rejected an income tax when it goes to the ballot. So they're not stupid. They're like, well, we can't just keep doing that. So what do? Well, let's make it for now an income tax on millionaires. We know based on the results of the capital gains initiative that voters here don't mind taxing the rich. So we can pass an income tax, but we can make it sound like it's just about making the rich pay their fair share. That is a message that has resonated time and time again. So they have that strategy. Okay, that's in place. But we really got to be able to drive it home when this eventually goes to voters, because it will. As soon as this is signed into law, someone will run an initiative and start collecting signatures to get it on the ballot in November. So what should we do? Well, we know we passed that law in 2022 that allows us to put this flowery statement about all the great things that this money will fund and all the things that will be taken away if you vote yes. And so that is why they're inserting very minuscule but widely popular tax breaks into the income tax proposal. And State Representative Josh Penner, a Republican, seemed to be calling this out in a way when this was being debated on the House floor. And he pointed out that, hey, if we want these things, why are we tying the fate of these popular tax breaks into the income tax bill?
The sponsors of the bill have tied incredibly popular bipartisan ideas like tax relief on diapers and over-the-counter medicine to this bill. They've tied this to this bill that they know is going to be challenged in court. If you look at Section 1202 of the bill, it explicitly states that if the income tax fails, the tax relief, such as those that I just spoke about, are also going to fail. Mr. Speaker, we cannot legislate this way. We can't hold diaper taxes and over-the-counter medicine hostage in this bill.
But they're doing it for a reason. They're doing it for a reason because they want to put those popular things on the ballot in November. And again, going back to what they put in the intent of Senate Bill 6346, it'll fund K-12 education, healthcare, higher education, essential government services, a working families tax credit. That's why Governor Bob Ferguson has continued to say that he wouldn't sign the bill unless it had those things in it.
I've said multiple times that any bill I sign must send a significant percentage of the revenue back to Washington families and small business owners.
Only because he wants it on the ballot. So let's envision and let's just predict. I could probably give you, down to the wording, what the ballot measure language will read. You know, this initiative would repeal a tax on income over $1 million a year. If repealed, it would take money away from the working families tax credit and tax breaks for families. Something like that. It's being weaponized, this process. And you'll recall back when the capital gains tax repeal was heading to the ballot. The groups that were opposed to the repeal of the capital gains were running insane advertisements. They were using developmentally delayed children in political ads to say, if you repeal the tax on capital gains, it hurts them. Literal developmentally delayed children. And they did that because in the intent of the bill and buried in the capital gains, this is part of small sliver what it was being used to fund. And that's also why these tax breaks aren't very meaningful. You know, one of the things Governor Ferguson says, and one of the intent things it says in the bill, is it will pay for free school lunches, which is a pretty popular policy, the idea that parents shouldn't have to pay more. But as we know, 75% of kids in our state already get that through federal and state programs. So the intent is this minuscule thing. But you have to have it in there if you want to weaponize the policy and put it on the ballot. I mean, they are geniuses. Frankly, they are political geniuses. Their policies are really stupid, but they're out-politicking Republicans, and it's not even close. And I'm not saying that Republicans haven't tried to stop these things, and I'm not saying that House Republicans didn't give it a good old-fashioned college try when they debated this income tax for 24 hours straight. But Democrats have been setting the stage. They look 4 years ahead when they do these things. We are planning this income tax policy. We're looking 4 years ahead. How do we make it work? How do we make it stick? And so we are going to have that fight ahead of us. And it's going to be very similar to the capital gains fight. We have to convince voters that this isn't just about rich people. We have to try to explain to voters that they're including all these tax breaks just so they can have this line on the ballot that makes the tax more palatable. And that's going to require money. And conservatives and businesses in Washington state, they don't want to donate money anymore because they're sick of losing. Because Democrats are so strategic and they air these ads that are deeply disingenuous and dishonest, but it doesn't matter because Washington voters fall for it and the media will push whatever narrative they want them to push. And so I will say it is going to be very difficult to have a successful initiative to repeal this income tax as soon as Governor Bob Ferguson signs it. And we're going to be up against a machine that is far more sophisticated, far greater, and has far more fuel than the machine that we will be able to employ to defeat it. And so to that, Democrats, good for you. I mean, honestly, I applaud you. I applaud you for your sophistication in these efforts, no matter how evil it might be. Speaking of the state Supreme Court, we're going to have a story coming up later about the fact that right now there's three vacancies, Governor Bob Ferguson packing it, I'm sure, with people who he believes will uphold his unconstitutional income tax, but also people who have donated to his political campaigns. First, are you concerned about what's happening in Iran with oil prices and all of that? There's also a lot of uncertainty in the market around AI and what that's going to mean for jobs, etc. But if you want to know how all that impacts your retirement portfolio, our friend Zach Abraham is having a free live webinar coming up April 2nd at 3:30 p.m. Pacific. Bulwark has a full schedule during the webinar to help you cut through the market noise. They'll talk AI, crypto, tech, also what's going on in Iran, and they'll go through how Bulwark is focused on risk management. They're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So join Zach's Cutting Through the Market Noise webinar, April 2nd, 3:30 p.m., totally free to sign up. Register now at knowyourriskpodcast.com. You can also schedule your free Know Your Risk Portfolio review and subscribe to Zach's Daily Market Recap at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Again, knowyourriskpodcast.com. And we'll have a new episode out tonight of Swamp Watch with Zach, saying he will leave. Zach Abraham, he is just the latest millionaire in Washington state to announce that he will be re-domiciling over the income tax once it's passed and once it becomes law. So we're not just making it up that there's going to be capital flight. So he and I talk about that in Swamp Watch. A new episode will be out tonight. All right, so all this is happening at the state level, but things are even worse in Seattle. So there is a State of Downtown Seattle address that's given by the Downtown Seattle Association every year. So here's the, and look, I have some criticisms for the Downtown Seattle Association. I'm going to set those aside until the end of this segment. But John Scholes is the president of the Downtown Seattle Association, and all of the politicians are in the room for this. So the socialist mayor of Seattle is in the room. She spoke. Girmay Zahalai, the progressive borderline socialist King County executive, is in the room. And John Scholes was going as scorched earth as I've seen him go when it comes to the business climate. And he had this big old graphic behind him about how bad things are for downtown Seattle. The job losses compared to the job growth in Bellevue. So Seattle experiencing job losses. Bellevue has experienced a 12% growth in jobs. A lot of those jobs taken from Seattle. $1 billion in new Seattle business taxes. The downtown office vacancy rate is at 32%. And office buildings in downtown Seattle have seen a 58% decline in their value. They're not valuable because people, they're not being leased. And they're also in these high crime areas, and people don't want to buy a building in downtown Seattle where there's all these vacancies and where there's drug addicts everywhere. So he had that big bold in the back. Center Square covered a little bit of what John Scholes said. He said last night, the Emerald City's downtown area has lost 37,000 jobs in the last 5 years, and that's just going to continue to go up. He told the crowd, we're going in the wrong direction. At the same time, he pointed to the success of Bellevue. He said, and over the same period where we've seen a decrease in jobs, we've seen a record increase in taxes that employers in the city of Seattle are paying and that they aren't paying in Bellevue and other cities in our region. So they are becoming far less competitive. Now, for her part, Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson spoke earlier on in the program before John Scholes got up there. Now, look, if there is a definition of speaking to the crowd, that's what she's doing here. Because this is a very anti-business mayor. She came into office saying, we need more progressive revenue. And then she gets in a room to speak full of business leaders and tries to make herself act moderate. Give me a break. Says Seattle Mayor Katie Wilson spoke earlier in the program saying she understands businesses' concerns that taxes in Seattle are higher than in nearby communities. She said, I very much appreciate that it is not ideal for our tax environment for businesses to be wildly out of step with neighboring jurisdictions. Wilson said later in her speech that as a progressive and a socialist, she believed it was important for people to have trust in their government. She also alluded to pending budget cuts for 2027, with the city of Seattle facing a budget deficit of up to $140 million. She said, we can't be afraid to stop funding things that aren't working well, she said, without offering details of specific reductions her administration was considering. Now, look, to the Downtown Seattle Association and to Seattle businesses, and as much as I am business friendly, you guys have been weak. Weak, 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 weak. And you've been progressive boot kissers. Bootlickers? Bootlickers. They would be more likely to invite a progressive to speak to them than they would to invite someone like me to speak to them. And why is that? I mean, they absolutely ostracize anyone who's conservative, Trump, whatever it is. And we've seen that in city council races as well. They're not going to support Republicans, oh my gosh. And they're not going to even support a moderate Democrat. And it's because they are trying to placate progressives. They've been doing this for years and years and years. And they'll give in to some of their desires here and there. You know, they won't oppose, for instance, climate policies and things like that. I mean, hell, the Seattle Chamber of Commerce, old Seattle Chamber of Commerce executive, I called her out for donating to Democrats who are pushing these policies. She's over there donating to Bob Ferguson and to Democrats and progressives who are passing new business policies. And then they turn around and be like, oh my gosh, woe is us. Businesses are leaving Seattle. So they think that by kind of giving money here and there or inviting these progressives and socialists into the fold, that they can somehow, I don't know, stay on their good side? Has that ever worked? Literally, it's never worked. You should not have invited Katie Wilson to speak. And you should have made a public ordeal of not inviting her. You should have said, we've invited every mayor of the city of Seattle for X amount of years to speak. We will not be inviting the socialist mayor, Katie Wilson, because she is suggesting that there need to be more business taxes. I mean, she should be completely shut out of anything. No business owner in Seattle should donate to a single Democrat. And I know that you might say, well, Brandy, there's no Republicans there. It doesn't matter. Because at some point you have to make a point and you have to make them feel like the outsiders. You have to make them feel like they have no friends. And that's the only way to start slowly changing behavior. You don't give them a dime. You don't give them a microphone to come in there and insult you with lies that they're more moderate than they really are. And so, yeah, if the Downtown Seattle Association and the Seattle business community want to start changing the state of Washington, they need to completely revolt from supporting a single Democratic candidate. Don't talk to them. Don't email with them. Don't show up at City Hall. Make public pronouncements that you will not come to the table with them until you see a significant change. And at the end of the day, I mean, how many? We just talked yesterday about Plymouth Housing, which is a failed part of the homeless industrial complex. They have these low-income housing units that just turn into drug dens. People die there. People overdose there. There's a ton of crime wherever they go in. And then it turns out they have an event, a gala, for funding. Some of the biggest employers in the region giving them money for them for their gala, like Alaska Airlines and Amazon and all these other companies. So donating money because you want to look like you're nice, I don't know, to a failed homeless housing entity that just lets people die in a building as opposed to die in a tent. So every day that goes by, I have less and less sympathy for Seattle's business community. And I know it doesn't apply to everyone. I know there's some business owners in Seattle who have not supported or pretended or cozied up next to these individuals. But it's time to make them feel like they are living on the margins of society. Because I believe they are. I believe someone like Katie Wilson, even though she was elected mayor of Seattle, in the context of Washington State, if people were honest about her and her policies and her lack of experience, she is on the margins of society. And instead, who do they make feel like they're on the margins of society? Trump supporters. Like Trump, who's been good for business. And I acknowledge that some of Trump's policies have had a detrimental impact to Seattle, like his beef with Canada. We rely on a lot of tourism, so I know it hurt hotels to a certain extent, but they were already hurting. Democratic policies have done far, far worse things for the tourism industry in Seattle. I mean, the drug crisis and the crime crisis and all of that has deterred far more tourists than Donald Trump's beef with Canada. Yet I think I told this story. I had a hotelier text me, a rage-induced text after I went to the White House with Trump. How dare you support this man, da-da-da, who's hurt our businesses and blah-blah-blah. And I go, you have to be kidding me. You have to be kidding me. Have you ever sent a rage-induced text like that to someone who supports a socialist? Of course not. No, they push the Trump supporters into the fringes of society and they cozy up to the socialists and the progressives. And then they wonder what's happened to our once beautiful, economically thriving city. Well, that's exactly what happened. In a large part, you did it to yourselves. So my sympathy only goes so far. All right, coming up next, a new appointee to the state's highest court happens to be a donor to the guy who appointed him. Gosh, pay to play. First, it is March, start of spring, and it does kind of feel like it because it's been raining nonstop. Did you lose power last night, Nicole? We lost power at our house, woke up in the middle of the night without power. So what do they call it when spring comes in like a lion? Is that it? I'm not good at it. Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah. Comes in like a lion, not like a lamb, something like that. It was nasty. But anyway, when spring comes, there's a ton of outdoor to-dos. And my husband will handle some of those, but some of them like exterior cleaning. I'm going to have our friends at Valentine Roofing handle that. Also a good time of year if you have any concerns about your roof and whether it needs to get replaced, have our friends at Valentine come and check it out. If it can be repaired, they'll repair it. But if you need a new roof, they have a great March promotion going on. So they'll not only take care of you this year, but they have next year covered too. So this month only, you'll get a free year of roof maintenance when you purchase a new roof. So you'll get the new roof and then you'll enjoy seasonal checkups and professional care to keep that new roof looking its best. Plus, they have flexible, very flexible financing options with payments as low as $159 a month. And no surprise that Valentine Roofing is trusted across Puget Sound by thousands of homeowners. It was voted the 2025 Best Roofing Company in the Seattle Times Best in the Pacific Northwest Awards. So that's a pretty big deal. 206 Roofing for your free estimate. 206 Roofing. Make sure to tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Is it unbelievable, though? I don't know. It's pretty believable. So just so happens when Democrats are getting ready to sign into law an unconstitutional income tax that three state Supreme Court justices decide to retire. And I really believe it's that maybe some of them weren't ready to sign off on it. Maybe Democrats knew that, encouraged them to step away so they could put people on the court. All of this is conjecture, but this is an opinion show, so that is my opinion. And so what happens is Governor Ferguson gets to appoint replacements until there's an election. So his latest replacement choice is a guy named Theo Angelus. Oh, Nicole, my device ran into a problem and it has to restart. So I've just got to read this off the screen quick.
Oh, no.
It says Governor Bob Ferguson made his second appointment to the Washington State Supreme Court today, announcing that Theo Angelus will be replacing retiring Justice Barbara Madsen. It says Angelus is an accomplished attorney with 25 years of legal experience. He currently focuses on appellate work, intellectual property litigation, and general litigation as a partner at a private law firm, blah, 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 blah. You know what I read about him, though? Something he has never done. Mm-hmm. He's never been a judge. This guy has never been a judge. And you are appointing him to be one of the most important judges in the state of Washington. Well, that's kind of odd. Bob Ferguson, why would you do that? I have a thought on why Bob Ferguson would do that. Could it be that good old Theo has donated quite a bit of money to his political ambitions? Constant donations, in fact. Loves donating to Bob Ferguson. And look, it was some cash donations, probably at events for Bob, where he's, you know, given cash for some sort of thing. But this is a guy who has never been a judge, donates a lot to not only Bob Ferguson, but to Democratic political candidates, and he gets elevated to the most important judgeship in the state of Washington. Should be illegal. Should absolutely be illegal to appoint a judge to the state Supreme Court who has given you political donations, at least within a certain period of time. And he's never been a judge. That should also be against the law. You should have had to serve on some sort of court as a judge in some sort of capacity to be able to do that job.
We should make it a law like they are with sheriffs, giving them ability to
more restrictions for sheriffs than there are job requirements for sheriffs than there is for a state Supreme Court justice, which is arguably a more powerful position than the governor himself. So this from the Center Square. Ferguson appoints Theo Angeles to the Washington Supreme Court. It says the state's highest court is experiencing significant turnover this year. Ferguson already appointed Colleen Melody to the state Supreme Court to replace retiring Justice Mary Yu. The appointment was announced in November. She was sworn in January 21st. Justices Raquel Montoya Lewis and Charles Johnson are stepping down with their seats to be filled in the November election. And so this is one of these things. I know the judicial races are never very sexy, but we don't pay enough attention to them. And it is very hard once there's someone in the position. It's very hard to be able to run against them. There's different rules for campaigning for judges. And so I know that Dave Larson, for instance, is running again, which he almost ran, just narrowly was defeated in 2024, was it? Yeah, the 2024 election. And so people just have to realize, and I think it'll become incredibly relevant with this income tax debate. Those elections are going to be the difference between whether that income tax becomes law or not. So Bob Ferguson will sign it into law. There'll be an initiative in November, but the legal wrangling over it will take a couple years. So if we can get some sane Supreme Court justices into office in November, well, then we can take care of it at the state Supreme Court. And so they're going to spend a ton of money on those races, by the way. They will spend a ton of money on those races because they understand that the most important positions in the state of Washington are the state Supreme Court. The state Supreme Court that upheld their capital gains tax, saying it wasn't a property tax, it was an excise tax, even though every other state in the nation considers capital gains property. And so you had this court packed with progressives who did something that is unheard of in tax law. So that's how important the state Supreme Court is. My computer is fixed now. My computer just went crazy on me. It said, sorry, I have to restart.
Mine never does that without me telling it.
No, didn't even give me a choice. Said we've run into an error.
Dang.
I think Bob got in here. I think Bob was like, shut it down. She's telling all my secrets. Shut it down. All right. We'll get to national news coming up next and what's happening in Florida. Obviously, a lot of ties between what's happening in Washington and what's happening in the state of Florida. First, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, consider becoming a member of the Rental Housing Association of Washington. A good group of housing providers across the state. They do a lot of social activities and events where you can talk housing policy. So really, it's a good organization for anyone interested or involved in housing policy in any capacity to be involved in. And then they also are down in Olympia advocating on your behalf and can help you on a one-on-one basis as you're trying to navigate what is a constantly changing, complex world of rules and regulations. So rhawa.org, rhawa.org to become a member, learn a little bit more about the organization. They are Washington's trusted resource, empowering housing providers. This is wild. I will say when I first saw this, I was like, screw California, what about us? So there was this story out from ABC News, an exclusive. FBI warns police in California that Iran wants to retaliate for U.S. attacks by launching drones against the West Coast, according to an alert reviewed by ABC News. So the alert in question read this. and it was an FBI alert to local police departments. We recently acquired information that as of early February 2026, Iran allegedly aspired to conduct a surprise attack using unmanned aerial vehicles from an unidentified vessel off the coast of the United States homeland, specifically against unspecified targets in California, in the event that the U.S. conducted strikes against Iran. We have no additional information on the timing, method, target, or perpetrators of this alleged attack. So in response to that, that's a freaky thing. I think if you live in California, you see that, you're like, oh my gosh, Iran's going to bomb us. Gavin Newsom said, I'm in constant coordination with security and intelligence officials to monitor potential threats to California, including those tied to conflict in the Middle East. While we are not aware of any imminent threats at this time, we remain prepared for any emergency in our state. So meanwhile, somebody put out the actual memo that was sent, like the unclassified law enforcement sensitive memo that ABC News reviewed in order to write its report. And they point out that ABC News left out in their report a critical word. So remember what ABC said, they quoted from this memo that they obtained. We recently acquired information that as of early February 2026, Iran allegedly blah, blah, blah. The actual memo said, we recently acquired unverified information that as of early February, they left out the word unverified. Every other word is exact. They're quoting from the memo. They left out the word unverified. That's insane. Old me would give them the benefit of the doubt and say it was an accident. New me says, nope, that's intentional. They want to drum up anger over what President Trump is doing in Iran, and they want people to be scared.
Old you would have said that that was not intentional.
Yeah, old me would have said, hey, you left a word out there when you were transcribing that. Listen, old me. old me.
Okay.
That was in Legacy News. But now I'm like, absolutely intentional. Absolutely intentional. They want people to be fearful. And then Gavin Newsom loves it because he's trying to run for president. So he's like, we're on the lookout. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay. So Caroline Levitt's pissed. She says, this post and story should be immediately retracted by ABC News for providing false information to intentionally alarm the American people. They wrote this based on one email that was sent to local law enforcement in California about a single unverified tip. The email even states that the tip was based on unverified intelligence, yet ABC News left out this critical fact in their story. Why? To be clear, no such threat from Iran to our homeland exists, and it never did. Now, to be fair, I think the reasonable thing is somewhere in between those two. So I don't believe that this isn't worthy of reporting on. This is an actual law enforcement memo that they felt like was enough to send it to California law enforcement agencies. Now, if ABC News was going to report on it, they should have reported on it accurately and underscored that this was unverified, it was from a single source, it was unclassified, so it might not be a big deal, but it is something that California police departments are worried about, but that's not what they did. So I disagree with Caroline Levitt that it should be totally retracted in its entirety. No, it should be corrected. And when you're telling Americans as the news media that Iran might bomb the state of California, you do have a lot of responsibility not to stoke unreasonable fear. Like, reach out to the White House. What does the White House say about this? You know, oh, well, this isn't, we have no intel that this is something that's going to happen. You know, and could Iran even carry that out off a vessel? Like, we have so much technology. We would know if Iran had a vessel near California that they were going to launch a drone attack from. So it's just, it's again, it's fear mongering. And it's all about Orange Man bad. We hate Orange Man. So we need to stoke fear about what he's doing in Iran. And there's a million reasons to be concerned about what's happening in Iran. I'm not saying there isn't. There's a million things to criticize. Oil prices, all of this, exit strategy, all of these things. There's a million things. You don't have to make something up. Or you don't have to report on something and make it seem much more imminent or serious than it is. All right, I'm glad we have our segment Florida Report on Thursdays, because wow, there's a lot going on in Washington State that is going to have a very positive impact on the state of Florida. It is Thursday, time to check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State. It is our segment Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, sounds like you have a new neighbor.
We do down here have a lot of new neighbors, but yes, we got one of your transplants.
Yeah, Howard Schultz. You're really close to like next door to his $44 million condo, right?
I used to be, before I bought the house and moved off the beach, I lived in Surfside where he bought his condo at the surf club Ritz-Carlton Residences.
Yeah, you also, people might not know this, but your full-time job has been like as a photographer, and you photograph a lot of high-priced real estate. I guess I was surprised that he bought a condo only for the sake of like privacy. I know his Seattle compound is very isolated. It's a house. I mean, but you've been in these, like, is he going to have privacy at a place like that?
Yeah, I mean, buildings like that are owned by very, you know, the units are owned by very wealthy people who don't spend all their time in Florida. Mm-hmm. So they're usually a second, third, fourth, even fifth home for a lot of people. So when I do go in to photograph like condos like that, you very rarely actually see people using the pool in the hallways. It's not a high occupancy rate at all times. So I do think you'll get a lot of security, you'll get a lot of privacy. And Miami just doesn't have the land footprint for people to have big compounds in private areas. So a lot of wealthy people buy condos.
Yeah, I mean, there are big houses like Star Island has a bunch of big mansions on it and all that stuff. So there's places, but you know, in retirement, maybe they just wanted the condo life. Sounded better than that. So that's happening. Not a surprise. Florida's getting a lot of attention. We're trying to get Ron DeSantis on the show, which I don't know why he won't come on the show, but we're trying right now because we want to talk to him about all the business policies attracting people there. But part of it might be that as we're increasing taxes there, Florida lawmakers are cutting taxes.
Yep. Yet again, this legislative session, they put a lot of emphasis on places that they could cut taxes to make living in Florida just a little bit more affordable. Of course, the property tax thing is the highest on DeSantis' list, and I think what most people are anticipating happening, but that looks like it's gonna make it to the ballot this year, and that would basically eliminate all non-school property taxes for homesteaded properties. And a homesteaded property is basically your permanent private full-time residence that you have in Florida. You have to apply to get the tax credits that you do get already for a homesteaded property, but this would basically save me quite a bit of money a month if this goes through.
Nice. Yeah. Because if I were to get a second home in Florida, I'd still have to pay the property taxes. But if it's my primary residence, no.
Exactly. If it's your primary residence, no. And I think the definition of primary residence is you just have to spend more than half of the year here.
Yep.
And this just has to be where all your mail goes and all that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there was also something attached to it that said they can't use this. Cities can't use this as an excuse to, you know, defund like police and fire services. But I mentioned this before, I think when this came up, you know, property taxes, there are some things the government needs money for. You know, there are, and roads and infrastructure and law enforcement, I think, are those primary things. So I guess my question would be, if they're not coming from property taxes, where is that money coming from?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've covered quite a few stories over the year, last year or so, of Blaze, our CFO of Florida, uncovering some pretty hefty misspending by local governments. Yeah. So I think that this will also just encourage them to find money in those wasteful places and make sure that that gets reallocated to the most important things like first responders, schools, et cetera. So I think the money's there. I just think they're not using it properly. Yeah. So, you know, time will tell, of course. But from everything that I've read and been looking at online is that most of these legislators believe that the money's there and they're just not using it in the right spot.
Yeah. So I guess we'll find out. And the only reason I say that is Florida's not this big, like, tax, you know, drunk on taxes state. Now, individual cities might be, and so they'll have to look for efficiencies. But as long as they've got enough to do the basics, then that's really all they need. You know, I was looking at what our tax rate will be in Washington state after the income tax becomes law for the highest tax bracket. It's going to be like 45%. I mean, I don't care if you have $1 trillion. Having to give 45% of that to the government is literally insane. And honestly, 10%. I mean, 10% is really where it should be for anybody at any income tax bracket. 10%, the government should be able to function off that.
Yeah, I agree. And it's just, it sounds so un-American to even think that somebody would have to hand over 45% of their earnings to the government, and then for the government to have the audacity to be like, we still don't have enough money. That's just crazy to me.
Yeah, absolutely nuts. Speaking of housing, so HOAs may become a thing of the past in Florida under a new bill that's heading to the Senate. So explain, this is interesting, because HOAs get a bad rap, but I think there are good HOAs and bad HOAs. So what does this do?
Well, I think under this, if you're a good HOA, you have nothing to worry about. But if you're a bad HOA, you do. This basically would provide a dissolution process to homeowners in an HOA, with only 20% of the HOA members signing a petition. You can have a vote for removing your HOA entirely with just 2/3 of a vote.
Yeah.
So I think, honestly, if that happens, I do think a lot of these HOAs will probably disappear within the first couple of years of this going through.
Yeah,
there's also,
that's a super majority vote, so that's not an easy thing to do. I mean, that's fair.
It's true, but I have a lot of friends who live in an HOA, and they all hate their HOAs. Yeah. Every one of them. Not there's nobody out there that I know personally that's like, oh, I love my HOA. There's always issues. There's always problems, and a lot of the HOAs down here, it's hundreds of dollars a month. It's not like a $50 a month, and they mow your easement. It's like hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month, sometimes thousands of dollars a month, and you're just getting citations, you know.
Yeah, so it's get like, the angry Karen, like, you didn't bring your garbage can in time.
Exactly. And I think, you know, we actively looked for a house not in an HOA, and it's actually more expensive to purchase outside of an HOA than in an HOA down here. So that was a whole thing. This bill would also create a court program for companies that would aim at reducing like long drawn out HOA disputes, make it a little more affordable for homeowners to be able to fight HOA citations for your garbage cans and things like that. So I think that's kind of nice to give a little bit more affordable reinforcement for homeowners when they do have HOA problems.
Yeah, so you don't have to take it to a full blown court of law, sort of a little mini dispute court. I do love Mike and I's HOA because we have a lot of green space. We have a couple parks and stuff for kids, and it's so cheap. I mean, we pay like virtually nothing. And so compared to other HOAs, I mean, they come around, they vote, like, here's the projects we want to undertake. And we approved all of them this year because honestly, I think our HOA per year is like $300. And they manage so much space. And so I don't mind ours. And there is the issue of, okay, if you're going to dissolve your HOA, who's going to take care of those green spaces? And I think a lot of residents would be like, I'll do it. I'll take my weed whacker out there and do it. Maybe they can be on rotation. So, all right, Miranda, your job now is to become friends with Howard Schultz so we can use the pool at the Ritz, and then to become friends with Jeff Bezos so we can use his super yacht.
You know what? I'm on it.
Okay, good. All right. We'll get, your timeline is a month. Good luck. All right. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
In the meantime, if Howard Schultz needs someone to house sit for him in Seattle until that, I mean, I'm happy to do that. You know, it's a little bit of a burden, but, you know, I'll make it work. All right. We'll get to our subscriber show poll comments coming up next. First, if you are one of the people who is either trying to flee to Florida or find a second home somewhere else to avoid the millionaire's tax, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team try to make things as stress-free as possible. That really is their focus. And in trying to help you avoid any sort of uncertainties later on in the process, which Miranda just went through buying a home in Florida. And, you know, those last few, like last week, and wondering if anything is going to come up and ruin it and all that, it is so stressful. And I know, having talked to her. So one of the things Wes does to avoid that is all of his listings now are pre-inspected. So they go through in initially and find anything that might pop up that a potential home buyer might want fixed or might need fixed. And so you get that all out of the way. And so it makes later on in the process, he says, it's just significant improve the outcomes for his clients. And then he pairs that with their Listing Boost concierge service. So they come in and pre-inspect it, but then on the back end, they're going to say, okay, here's what we found in our pre-inspection. We can help you come in, get the contractors in, fix all of that, repair anything that needs to be repaired, and we can make sure you don't have to pay for it until closing. So taking the financial stress off as well. So it really just is a better way to sell your home. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Go peruse his website. He's got Sold with Wes, where he can show you all the listings that they just sold, how they performed, and read some reviews from folks who've used West to sell their home. All right, let's get to our subscriber show poll for paid subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X. I asked you guys, and this ties into our top story, if an initiative to repeal the income tax makes it to the ballot, do you believe voters will pass it? Yes or no, given everything I just laid out for you. Go ahead, Nicole.
Gosh, it's so hard, but I actually think this is getting more, you know, people are more aware of what this does. I've had people at the gym stop me and say that they realize this is ridiculous and none of these people are millionaires. Yep. So I think this has more awareness than anything else has, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a toss-up.
I don't want to be negative, but I'm going to say no. Unless there's some substantial shift where there's an actual, like, well-funded effort to oppose the lies they're going to tell about this on TV, then I don't know why it would be any different than cap gains.
Yeah.
It has to be a really well-done campaign that makes people understand this is going to result in taxes, on income tax on you. And if they can't get out in front of that, then I think we're going to have the same result. But
well, and I think people think that, you know, millionaires will just leave and that's the end of it. But no, like, your property value will go down.
Yep.
Your everything will be affected by this. Everything. Yeah. Although you won't have as many businesses to go to.
Yeah. You guys are more optimistic. 80% say you think that it would pass. Let's see. Matthew Cook says, I think enough voters are smart enough to know what the end game is. I really hope you're right. CND Voss says, well, I would like to say yes. I feel sure that the party in power will write the ballot statement in a manner that will make it sound like the tax will only apply to the rich, thus duping the uninformed populace into approving it. And I mean, that's, as I said, that's why they made it initially just a tax on millionaires, because that's the ballot language is going to be just that. And there's really no way around it. Let's see, a couple from X. Josh Johnson says, it won't be easy as the AG gets to put the ballot title, repealing this will kill all babies, grandparents, and puppies instantly. Exactly. Yep. Yeah, that's just really frustrating. Let's see. Whiskey, I do not trust the legislators or judges to uphold the voice of the people. Midnight Rider, black-pilled, it will never matter what voters want or desire. The swamp is far deeper and wider than anyone realizes and will never allow the unwashed masses to have a say.
That's probably true.
Yeah, and Lisa, I kind of feel like Lisa. No, I no longer have faith in the voters. And that's unfortunate, but I feel that way. And it's an off year. It's going to happen in an off. Well, no, it's midterms. And that's actually not good for conservatives either, because the party in power is, you know, Republicans in D.C. And they always make it about Trumpism. So they'll find some way to do that. All right. We'll get to comments from the live stream and from our various platforms on Washington State being a laughingstock. Shannon says, I agree. The Republican Party has gone weak and silent. They don't go to media and talk. We get all of our info here. I mean, look, I think, and I don't want them to be offended, you know, but it's not really, I'm sure they're fine. They just lose everything. I mean, and part of that's their fault for maybe not always putting up the best candidates or running the best campaigns. Part of that's because the donor base has dried up because they've just lost so many times. Part of it's because of Donald Trump, and Democrats have successfully weaponized Trumpism against Republican candidates here, fair or unfair. But they are working against really a sophisticated machine. And you look at all of these groups, the tentacles of the Democratic Party in our state. They have all these groups that they mobilize on a moment's notice. Look at the income tax hearings. Well, you had 100,000 people or so sign in pro or con, which is important. Look at the room. The room was filled with the same scarf wearing unions. They got there first. They showed up, made time in the middle of the day. And so their activism is just far more sophisticated. Their web. And I get it, because they get money from taxpayers, because Democrats turn around and give them money to basically fund activism. But how do you compete with that?
I also think it's hard to, it's a branding thing. So it's kind of like, I don't know why this is the only thing popping into my head, but it's kind of like Jack in the Box when they had E. coli, right? You can never come back from that. It's always in my brain. The Jack in the Box had E. coli that one time, I don't know, 20 years ago. I don't know what that was. That was forever ago. But it's hard to come back from that. And the Republicans right now, they're the anti-gay marriage, they're still anti-abortion, they're still things are still ingrained in people, and they have not been able to say we're a more welcoming party. I think that's where the branding has not improved, and it's hard to get past.
On the tax break scam and the plotting, Mary says, believe me, all these millionaires already have homes in other states and they all have tax shelters. This will be easy if they want to exit. J.G. Crump, Republicans go along to get along. And there are some fighters in Olympia. There are some fighters that emerged in the 24-hour income tax debate. And there's only so much you can do, right?
Oh, yeah.
And they're left with these minorities that were handed to them, basically.
Right. It was like a high schooler going in against, I don't know.
The NBA. Seattle, it's like a man going in to play against a woman, you know, compete against a woman. Seattle businesses paying the price. Merwin Wren, those financial impact statements are not financial impact statements. They are merely value judgments and are essentially useless. People need to go a brain and fast or we will become like Detroit. So talking about what we mentioned with the income tax scheme.
It's about talking to your neighbor, talking to your friends, talking to your family member, making everybody aware that people that don't pay attention to shows like ours or you know, you just got to get the word out.
I agree. Let's see. TCD, the Dems have the scales tipped their way due to having the media on their side. Yeah. And then they can block the media that's not on their side from coming in and asking questions. So the media is the primary villain in all of this. Mm-hmm. On Bob appointing one of his little buddies to the Supreme Court, E. Poindexter, such hypocrisy. They can remove sheriffs without real cause, but judgeships should have more requirements for eligibility. Yeah.
Yep.
Eric, if that's the case, I'll run for the state Supreme Court. Go for it, Eric. Because I'm assuming he's joking that he hasn't been a judge either.
One of the quotes from Bob was, he's appealed after appealed after appeals. He's faced appeals after appeals. And I'm like, oh, why is that selling this, that he constantly challenges what the court says?
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't like what the court says usually.
Yeah, I just think you should have to have been a judge.
You should have to have, like, somehow taking a class.
Yeah. On California being warned of the possible Iranian drone strikes. This is funny. Robin, California already has an imminent threat and his name is Gavin. Yes, that's true. I read some Babylon Bee article where it said Iran considered bombing California, but then realized Gavin Newsom already destroyed it. So I was like, yeah, exactly. There's
already
nothing
done
to
check.
Destroy there. Done. Okay, we'll get to our closing sanity check, which is a fun one today. Coming up next, we needed a fun one today to end the show. First, if you are a business in Washington State, things are already tough enough for you, as you know. Don't navigate the insurance market alone. Reach out to our friends at First Mark Insurance, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. I use First Mark for my business needs at Undivided, and I love it because they're constantly checking in, and they're a local business. So they know what you're going through. They know how important it is for you to find cost savings during this difficult time for businesses, and they can come on site and evaluate your needs as well. I also use First Mark for my home insurance, and Mike and I use it for all our personal effects, so to speak, and we just love it. We just feel like we have a family member dealing with our insurance that's always got our back and is looking out for our best interests and making sure we have the insurance we need in the event that something horrible happens. So, like so many Undivided viewers and listeners, and me, myself, reach out to First Mark Insurance to take the First Mark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. You could be our next First Mark Challenge victory. FirstMarkInsurance.com, the very best part is they work for you. All right, let's get to our closing sanity check. This is a good one. All right. There's a bill in Minnesota that would allow nursing homes to host happy hours without a liquor license. So they could have in there, be drinking happy hour without a liquor license. This is Anita, and she just wants the legislature to let her drink boxed wine.
I love happy hour, just like many of you do, I am sure. Just because we are older and live in an assisted living doesn't mean that we should have fewer freedoms than anyone else. Allowing our facility to coordinate this happy hour affords us and our families the peace of mind that we can enjoy life but not be out slipping on the ice to stop and get our box of wine.
Yeah, let them drink wine. What the hell? I didn't even know that there would have to be a law. First of all, why does there have to be a law? Why do we have to be a government overregulation? Why does the government have to be involved in whether old people at an old folks' home drink wine and have happy hour? Just insane. Let Anita drink wine. I saw these hilarious Instagram videos where there's this performer who goes around and performs at old folks' homes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, save them. She was like some annoying lefty who was like singing these chants and stuff. And they're all sitting there like, I just want to die right now. And I was like, oh, my God, get them some strippers or some real entertainment. Good God. All right. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been a week's worth of episodes of Undivided. I hope you join us coming up this Sunday on Sundays with Subscribers. We've got a great guest, someone who has built businesses and, yes, made a lot of money in Washington State, who is planning on potentially leaving over the millionaire's tax. So we'll have that. If you'd like to become a subscriber, support our work, catch episodes of Sundays with Subscribers, participate in the daily show polls and all the other stuff that comes along with it, it's just $5 a month. I think it's a pretty good deal for helping us try to push back against the narrative that the legacy media is putting out. So we would love for you to sign up. Go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. So subscribers, we will see you on Sunday. We'll have a new episode of Politics Unpacked. We'll have a new episode of Swamp Watch in the meantime. And then the rest of you, we'll see you Monday at noon. Okay, toodaloo.